This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch. Now, starting a champions network, whether it's about vulnerability, accessibility or inclusion, sounds simple enough. Get some people together, get them talking, and bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Everything in your organisation is now just magically peachy. But as many of you all know, champions networks in practice aren't easy to build at all, and they can be even harder to sustain. However, they can, with the right ingredients, succeed and make a significant impact. And our guest today knows this firsthand. Charlie Turrell is the Engagement Lead and Accessibility Champions Manager at the Ministry of Justice, and she's the co-founder of the Champions of Accessibility Network, which now connects nearly 3,000 people across the world. So in this episode, I asked Charlie to spill the beans and share what she's learned about building champions networks that actually work, covering the importance of purpose and leadership buy-in, the pitfalls of burnout and mediocre snacks, and why networks, to succeed, need to be fun, human, and never finished. Charlie, it's wonderful to have you here. Now, we've asked you on because you've developed and co-run a number of really successful champion networks. And this clearly is not an easy task, as we'll find out. But can we start by you telling us briefly about yourself and these networks?
So, yeah, my name is Charlie Turrell. So I'm currently the Engagement Lead and Accessibility Champs Manager at the Ministry of Justice. And previously, I was running the Champions Network at the BBC. And then midway through working at the BBC, I did a session that was live and the tech went. And so they were like, oh, just talk amongst yourselves, like chat to the audience. Big mistake for two ADHD people with lots of ideas. And on that session, I just said, oh, does anybody else do my job? Is there anything? Is anybody else? Like, I'm the only one at the BBC that tends to do this. So am I doing it right? Is there some new ideas? Is there something where we can collaborate with each other? And I said that and thought they would get maybe 20, 30 people and we could form a little working group. My inbox and LinkedIn was full of hundreds of messages. And now that has formed CAN, the Champions of Accessibility Network, and there's just under 3,000 people in that. So that really kind of took off. And it's great, actually, because it's meant that I've spoke to so many wonderful people and learned so many different things. And now we can get to share ideas pretty much across the world. So that's me in a nutshell, really.
Fantastic. Now, whether it's an accessibility network, whether it's a vulnerability champions network, whether it's somewhere, a network that's internal to our organisation with just our staff, or as you've done, create a network of many fellow travellers across different organisations. People always think that networks sound simple. They're often one of the first things that people suggest, aren't they? But they're actually really hard work. So why is it that people underestimate this when they say, hey, let's just set up a champion network? Why are they such hard work?
You know what? I think it leads into why even designing and building things tends to be hard work. You design for yourself. You think you create a network that works for you. And that's why accessibility often gets missed, because we design for the way that we navigate the world. But that isn't the way that everybody else navigates anything. You have to understand not only a culture of an organization, you've got to understand the culture of the micro networks that are already there, the culture of the role. So like if you're a dev, or if you're a designer, or if you use a researcher, there's unique language, there's unique processes, there's unique mindsets. And then a network, it's not just about capability building. You're thinking, oh yeah, you know, we can learn about accessibility as a group. Okay. But the network element of it, often people forget about. You have to be able to get people to speak to each other. And so you have to translate those languages from your dev, your designer, your developer, your policymaker, somebody that's just making training for various different areas. It's nuanced, you know, so you have to really understand people. And then you're looking at a whole different layer of maybe neurodivergent people. So some people's attention spans are smaller. Some people like to learn visually. Some people like to learn by doing. Some people like to sit and read and then contribute in their own way. So just doing a network, one that works for you, great. But that doesn't mean that everyone's going to turn up and enjoy it. You have to really be willing to, and I'm not saying fail, but you have to be willing to change over and over again.
So it's knowing the purpose of the network, what you want to achieve, and knowing those roles. Could you just talk us through, maybe using
the accessibility network, those steps that you took to kind of build it over time, because you mentioned kind of iterations, because we all say, hey, look, let's set up a network, and we've all got lots of energy.
Yeah.
But actually then building it is quite a challenge.
It is, yeah. So, like, okay, so giving you an example of the MOJ, there wasn't a Champions Network here. So I've gone from an environment at the BBC where this Champions Network has been going for the last 15 years. Accessibility was inbuilt in an organisation. You know, there was already stuff there where people had a lot of barriers that they experienced. So accessibility was intrinsic to the way that the BBC worked. So I took over something and changed it based on the needs of the business. Whereas the MOJ, right at the very beginning of that journey, there were people doing the work. There were pockets of people, like communities of practice, but there wasn't any structure in it. So you have to think of it from the top down and the bottom up. In order to make this network work, you need to make it work for the people that are involved in it. So you have to find out what's going on, what's already happening. The network needs to be built with people. It needs to be a collaboration. And you also, there's no point reinventing the wheel either. So you can almost build on what's already happening. There is no point in getting that network running if you don't have senior leadership buy-in, because you will always get to a certain point. And if accessibility is constantly being de-scoped, and that champion is, you can have all the will in the world, and if they keep getting blocked over and over again, they're just going to stop doing it. So I also had to make sure that this seemed like a shiny, new, exciting thing for senior leadership to get involved in. You want to make sure that people aren't repeating work in different areas where they're creating training programs, which are exactly the same. A network will help you give that visibility. You want metrics to help you understand whether something's working or not. You can get feedback directly from the champions that are doing this. It has to be this thing that they're really interested in. If they're doing things accessibly, or at least talking about accessibility, that trickles down into your product managers and your middle management, where often the pressures of above and below are also kind of pushing accessibility to the bottom of the pile. So if you're sat there as a product manager thinking what is important to senior leadership, and accessibility is one of those things, and you've got a champion that's already doing that, that flow works really well. Your champion is telling them what they need to do, why it's working. You've got success stories there. You're doing audits if that's what you're doing internally, and that looks really good. You know, you've got things to be able to shout about. You've got a well-oiled machine via this network. So you have to think about it in that way. You can't just do one or the other. You have to know how to speak to all these different groups and think, right, how do we link them together? That's the bit that can sometimes be quite tricky.
That's really helpful. So having that clear purpose with senior leadership, but at the same time scoping out with a range of roles across the organisation. I think if people are listening in an energy company or a financial services company, they can probably think of kind of a parallel roles and departments, the ones that you mentioned. Is it as important to say what you're not going to do?
Yes.
With the network? Tell us a bit about that.
So we are not training a bunch of accessibility specialists. That is what we're here for. We have an accessibility team at the MOJ. There is 7 of us in total with a wide range of different skills, different backgrounds. There's a thing in accessibility, it's never done, right? And you have to be okay with that. Accessibility is never finished. There's that moment there where people are going to feel frustrated. You almost have to let them know that this is a constant journey, and that's going to be really interesting.
It's that sense of purpose that's clear, and balancing that with the iteration of flexing the network over time. Because I see some networks, vulnerability champions, accessibility champions, inclusion champions, where in some ways they've become a dumping ground. Anything that's related to that issue, oh, they can do that, a bit of training. Oh, they can do operational process.
It's too much pressure. It is. It's too much pressure. You're not going to be all things to all people, and an accessibility champion is going to be the same. You know, you don't want to all of a sudden say you're a champion and everybody in that team goes to them constantly with all their accessibility problems and expect them to be fixing all of that all the time. They're a conduit of information. That's what you want them to be. You want to feel like you're empowering them to make some choices, and they're still going to be going on learning, but they might not have all the answers. They just know where to find the answer. You know, they're speaking to the team regularly. They're speaking to other champions. There's going to be problems that they don't know how to solve. Let's work it out together. You know, it's not all you, and it's not all that pressure just on that person. But it does mean that the work that they're doing and the learning that they're doing is celebrated as well. You know, they are making the time to learn about accessibility. So let's champion that. Let's talk about how well that person is doing when it comes to including all this stuff. So I think we're not basically making sure that everybody else is going to a champion. It's just making sure that that champion feels empowered to make some decisions that feel comfortable for them.
Now, I went to an organisation recently where they have a champions network, and it wasn't in the best of health. It had become very much a monthly information cascading. You will then share this with your colleagues. And over time, attendance had dwindled. What are the top things that help a champion network actually thrive and succeed?
Make it fun. Honestly, make it fun. I don't understand how accessibility can be so dry sometimes. I've gone to sessions where I've sat in a talk and I thought, even I don't care about this. You know, accessibility is about people, and people are amazing. You know, there are the nuances and the way that people navigate the world is genuinely fascinating. And then you've got not only the disability, you've got their environment and that they are in as well, the way that they process information, the way that they interact with other people. Go and learn about that. Talk about that. You know, that it's the most exciting thing. The psychology of people is fascinating. And I think sometimes you focus so much on compliance and rules and all the legal stuff that you can get bogged down in what you should be doing, right? And so look at it from a social model point of view. Think about this kind of person that is going through that environment. And then you're thinking, right, do they have access to assisted technology? Are they neurodivergent? Do they have a limb difference? You know, then you've got that layer of things. Once you find out all the information and the barriers and that they experience and the impact that has on when they're navigating that service, that is rich, full of information. You're not thinking about whether it's WCAG compliant. Is where your network dies a death. So make it enjoyable, make it fun, make it something where you're sharing things with colleagues. You know, that's why people want to feel part of something. They don't just want to have a tick box and then they've gone off to do the rest of their work, because no one's going to continue to do that, especially if there's no consequence, you know, with each other.
With networks, sometimes people are not given either protected time or they're not given the time that they need to attend meetings or even carry out maybe some of the actions afterwards. Is that something that you've seen in your work?
Yeah, you have to make sure that you are giving people enough time, but that's not their responsibility necessarily to push back on that. That's us as accessibility people. That's me as accessibility manager. So if you're finding that people aren't being given the L&D time, that they're not... they're finding that there's a little bit of a pushback from senior leadership, then I can go in and go, okay, let's have a conversation about that. Is it not a priority? Why isn't it a priority? Have you done an audit of your service recently when things are not going so well? So can I use that as a little bit of a carrot and a stick moment? Bearing in mind as well, you're never going to get everything right and you're never going to get accessibility perfect, right? So you might be thinking, well, our service only does some of these things right, but not all of them. Okay, that's still some, you know, that's still okay. If it means that you have to bring in one ticket rather than five tickets for accessibility in your, you know, in your product life cycle, then okay, fine. You have to make sure that people are understanding why it's important. And sometimes it's a lack of knowledge. It really is. Like, if you're seeing your leadership are going, yeah, it's not important, you go, oh, actually, it's a legal requirement, or actually, you are excluding people from this service, and that has a direct impact, and this is what this impact looks like. It's always going to happen where people see accessibility is not as important. It's the same when it comes to sustainability. It's intersectional for stuff like that. It's always seen as a nice to have, but it's not. You know, you are directly impacting people that are using your service, and we need to make sure that we get that narrative across to people.
So sometimes when I'm in organisations and a champions group has been organised, perhaps not as big as the ones that you've mentioned, and there is a clear purpose for it, but actually people are in that group are a little bit unhappy. They're maybe not being paid for their time. I wonder what your thoughts are on paying champions for extra work, essentially, that they're doing for an organisation.
It is extra work, and I appreciate that. But it, like I said earlier, it's not additional steps, it's missed steps. We are doing the work that should have already been done, right? So as much as, yes, okay, the organisation might put not as much of a focus on it, that's the organisation's issue, not the champion's issue. I think there should be rewards and recognition as a good motivator. It motivates anybody to do this kind of work. I appreciate that. But as if you are somebody that's disabled that is using a service and it is not up to standard or you're not being able to use that service, I don't think that someone should be paid extra to make sure that service works for you. I think that service should have just been working for you.
So not exactly being paid for the role. but actually it's that reward and recognition, because many people are volunteers. Now, one thing that anyone listening to this will pick up on is your energy, such as in commitment to actually championing accessibility. But how have you gone about balancing strategy with energy? Because energy can take us anywhere and try to do everything.
Yeah.
But I wonder where strategy sat in the networks that you've been involved in.
You have to have a clear plan. Otherwise, you can try and be all things to all people and burn out. But burnout is very real because, again, accessibility is never finished. And so it can be really hard, especially when there's lots of other external pressures. And in all honesty, you can be a victim of your own success. And so you can have everybody coming to you as a network. And then as a network manager, even trying to deal or look after 140 people who all want kind of your time and your energy. And some of them are really early on in the accessibility journey, so require more support. So you can't just have a free-for-all. You have to have a kind of firm strategy and plan. So I would say the balance is really key. You know, I had one champion, for example, who's a user researcher, who begrudgingly joined the network at a push of her senior leadership. And believe me, I thought that conversation was going to go very differently. And she was like, yeah, I just don't enjoy my job. I used to do this research with all these young people, and now I'm doing it with this group of people. I just don't see how accessibility fits in. And I was like, tell me about it. Let's have a little conversation. And I was like, your work is fabulous. I was like, the stuff that you're learning, I was like, that is gold. I was like, people will be really interested in this. She was like, I don't think they will. I was like, well, can I work with you to do like a mini session and just showcase that work? She wasn't very confident. We did it together. That was the highest attended session that I've ever run for champions, and people would not get off the call. And now she's done 3 more sessions, and she is gone off and is including accessibility in everything. And she's looking for a very accessibility focused role. So having that is really important. But that's that different level of strategy where you've got your baseline. You started to build that confidence, and then you're working with individuals to build that. So even though it does feel like strategy, it's still very people focused.
Now, what are some of the biggest mistakes people make when they try to set up or run a champions network? What do you see?
Doing too much too soon, I think. I think you can have a lot of energy and get really excited about it, but you've got to bear in mind that you have a day job as well, but there will be other pressures from elsewhere. So little and often is better. Being realistic about what you can learn. You know, you are not going to be an accessibility whiz overnight. Trying not to just go full throttle, I think, is really key. Also, I think it can be quite difficult if you mix in digital and non-digital people, where you're running a session that might be really tech heavy and everyone's come to it. You're going to get half those people that go, no idea what anyone's talking about. But you also don't want to learn in silos. So you really have to pick your topic. Also, if you run a network how you like it, that is great for you. But as a network manager, you're not the one that network is supposed to benefit. So you really have to find out how people like to learn. If everybody is a really visual learner, if everyone is really keen on workshops, and all you're doing is running sessions where you're talking at them for 45 minutes, really is no point in that. You might as well not have those people on board. So ask people what it is that works for them. And also, and I'm going to really stress this, because this is one thing I've noticed so much in any industry. If you're talking about accessibility and you're running inaccessible meetings, what are you doing? Like, you need to make sure that you are sharing agendas ahead of time. You need to make sure that your decks are accessible. You need to look at your color contrast. You need to make sure your language is right. I think make sure that no matter what you're doing, you're thinking, am I also a good example when it comes to accessibility, the way that I'm doing things?
What couple of pieces of advice, just to round up, would you give someone starting or relaunching a champions network?
Go and find the people that are just as excited about accessibility as you, and then you'll feel like your job isn't really a job, honestly. Like, I have cracking conversations every week that revitalize me, and sometimes I'm speaking to people and think, that is such cool work. I was like, how on earth are you even doing that trauma-informed design approach? Or are you doing that? It's like, and that will motivate you to continue doing stuff, because it will get hard occasionally. The admin's hard work, you know, you will get pushback. You will sit in one of those meetings where someone goes, yeah, we've got no disabled people using our service, or yeah, we don't care about it. And you're thinking, how? how have you said that out loud, actually? And you will have those moments that feel demoralizing. So you fill the rest of your time with those good moments. So I would say that is massive. Link up with other accessibility professionals. There are people that really love their work. You've got people there whose talks are genuinely fascinating, and their approaches to things are wonderful. And also speak to people that are using the service. Speak to disabled people. Don't avoid interacting. You find people that will just read stuff, and no one's ever spoken to actually someone that's using the service with a disability. No one's going to be offended. You know, the use of language is always room to learn. And if your language isn't right, someone will either correct you or politely be like, oh, hey, I prefer to be spoken in this way. It's like, great, wonderful, you've learned something new now. You know, don't avoid it. There's a massive amount of knowledge that is available to us. And you've got people that are more than happy to discuss their experiences. So involve people like that. And I think that will continue to drive your work and make sure that whatever network that you're putting in place is going to work for the people that you're trying to help.
Charlie Turrell, thank you very much.
And that was Charlie Turrell, reminding us that successful champions networks don't just happen, they take strategy, creativity, and a whole lot of love and commitment too. You can learn more about Charlie's fabulous work on LinkedIn. You can search there too for the Champions of Accessibility Network. Maybe they'll let you in. They let me in, so surely they must let you in too. And you can find her at ably.com. That's A-B, and it's our 11y.com. Just have a Google search for it. And that's it for this week's episode. So until next time, assemble your Avengers, keep it fun, and keep on remembering that vulnerability and accessibility too matters. Vulnerability Matters was produced by Mandy McGreevy and Phil King, and brought to you by the Money Advice Trust.